friends, and welcome to Dice Tribe, a Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition actual play podcast about high adventure, young heroes, and ancient evils in the Forgotten Realms. Dice Tribe is brought to you by the Encounter Roleplay Network and is sponsored by Fantasy Grounds, the coolest way to play D&D online. Dice Tribe is also sponsored by dndice.co.uk. You can get 5% off any of their beautiful dice at www.dndice.co.uk. Just remember to use the coupon code EncounterRoleplay. And if you're digging Dice Tribe, please leave us a 5-star review and let us know what you think on iTunes or Stitcher. We'd love to read your awesome reviews on air at the end of our episodes. It would really mean a lot to us.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the very first episode of Dice Tribe. How's everybody doing today?
Pretty good. Awesome.
All right, you guys ready to play some D&D?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, my name is Mark Slack. I'll be your Dungeon Master for this exciting adventure inside the jungles of Chult. First of all, we want to go around the table and introduce everybody so that you can get to know the cast and players that you're going to be listening to. As I said before, my name is Slack. My name is Mark Slack. I was born in 1974, the very same year that Dungeons & Dragons was born. I started playing when I was about age 10 in 84, and I have played, I think, every single edition of Dungeons & Dragons. So anyway, here we are in 5th edition, and I have not yet Dungeon Mastered a 5th edition campaign, so I'm really excited to do this, but you're going to have to bear with me because I'm going to get some of the rules wrong. It's going to be a learning process that you get to go on with me as you listen to the podcast. All right, so enough about me. Let's go around the table here. We're going to meet our players and find out a little bit about who they are and who they're going to be playing in the campaign. First of all, Bill DiPietro.
Hey, I'm Billy. I'll be playing the character of Remy, level 1 half-elf bard. I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons for a long time, since middle school, but I've also been involved with sports for an equally long amount of time, so it's been a crafty balance to work my whole life, keeping the D&D from the jocks and then keeping the jockery from the nerds. But it's always been an amazing escape from anything that you have going on, and that's why I've played AD&D. I've played 3rd edition. I skipped out on 3.5. I did 4th edition and had a 3.5-year campaign with 5th edition, which was really rewarding and awesome. I work in a gym. I do theater on the weekends, and D&D is the perfect balance of like who I am as a person and what I hope to achieve and inspire other people to do, which is whatever you want. Do whatever you want. Really excited because this is also my first primary spellcaster. As you can imagine, being a brute and working at a gym, I have played barbarians and fighters my entire D&D career.
Every time we've ever played together, you've been some kind of like melee class.
Yeah, and it has its purposes, and it feels really good and really rewarding because you can't do that stuff to people in real life, but you can definitely do it in a Dungeons & Dragons campaign. But this is my first full-on spellcasting class, and he's got a really awesome story and a really cool character, and I'm really excited to show that to other people. How cool is that that we're doing that?
Hey, we're doing it.
But yeah, that's me.
All right, so thank you very much, Bill. There you go. Bill is playing Remy, the half-elf level 1 bard. Now we're going to move on to our next player in this adventure, and his name is Doug.
Yeah, I'm Doug. I'm going to be playing Walla Wick Whisper of Candlekeep. He is a level 1 variant human ranger. I've been playing D&D since, my parents dropped me off at like the public library, and I third grade, and I went looking for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles stuff, and I found Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness, which was an RPG, and it explained the concept to me. Took me a little while to figure it out, but eventually I was quietly playing by myself the adventures of a lone wolf, like mutant wolf ninja. And yeah, eventually I started playing with other people, usually D&D, done editions 2nd through 5th.
I want to hear more about this mutant wolf ninja. What was the name of that character?
I believe his name was Suzuki Kazuo.
Yes, it was Suzuki Kazuo, of course. Well, fantastic. Your character is, once again, Wallow of Candlekeep, and your class is Ranger, the Unearthed Arcana set Ranger.
Yeah, I'm taking the opposite track of Billy. I normally play, like, a lot of spellcasters, and that's just a giant source of anxiety for me at higher levels and constantly agonizing over which spell to pick or prepare. And playing a ranger, I feel, takes a little bit of, like, the choice off of me. I'm pumped for that.
All right, well, thanks, Doug. And let's meet the rest of our players for today's episode. And that plural players is actually only one player. And his name is Gabe. Gabe Hiltz, tell us a little bit about yourself and what character you're going to be playing in this campaign.
All right, my name is Gabe. I'll be playing Magnus Linkaxel. He's a level 1 human artificer.
Dude, I'm really excited to play an artificer in the Forgotten Realms because it's, first of all, a non-Eberron artificer, which I think is a great challenge since there's not a lot of material written to fill that in. And the fact that the Unearthed Arcana template leaves a little bit to be desired on the story side, man, we're going to have a lot of fun figuring that out.
Yeah. Especially since I'm the guy who rolls terribly at the table and have always played clerics because healing people doesn't require a d20 check.
Well, hey, you're also going to be the person building stuff, which is kind of what you do, like, every day.
It is, and I have never played a character that resembles me so much.
All right, guys, are you ready to roll some d20s and play some D&D?
Thumbs up, let's do this.
Yes. Fantastic. Well, here we go.
Far in the south of Faerûn lies an isolated realm known as Chult. Mysterious and exotic to the so-called civilized realms of the north, it is a land of jungles, volcanoes, and rugged mountain peaks which hold many secrets within its harsh terrain. Only the brave or the foolish face its dangers willingly, and of those, only the lucky survive.
Alright, ladies and gentlemen, let's begin our tale. First of all, we're going to set the scene. Alright, the camera pans in. It's the beginning of the movie, right? Now, I don't know if we're ever going to have an actual theme song or something like that, but right now we're listening to some excellent music that you're going to be able to check out in the show notes. But I'm assuming it's going something like this. Dun da dun 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 da dun dun dun, right? And the camera is zooming over jungle, luscious jungle. It hops over a mountain, and then and then it keeps going. And then it zooms in. The year is 1487. Somewhere in the Shining Sea, between the island nation of Lantan and a small island, mysterious, called the Mother of Mists, a ship makes its way east, fleeing the setting sun. So you have the camera panning down on a beautiful sailing vessel, a sloop 60 feet in length, one mast sticking straight up with a giant square sail. There's actually many sails on this ship. There's a giant square sail about halfway up the mast, a smaller, what they call a topsail, which is a sailor pronunciation for a word that looks like it says top sail, but it's a topsail on the very top of the ship. And then there's an aft sail that comes out of the back of the mast, and then two large white triangles that come out of the front, almost like wings. We get a glimpse of the captain and the first mate. The captain is a very charming, strong-looking female gnome. She has a petticoat on and leather breeches, and her hair is whipping in the wind as she holds a tiny wheel, because a gnome, you know, couldn't turn one of those big wheels. So she's got a tiny wheel on the front of this non-pirate excellent sailing ship. And standing next to her is this tall man who looks maybe like a cossack, Like, he's got a giant full black beard and a fez on. All right, so this ship is heading east, and the sun is just setting in the west. It is a gorgeous day, not a cloud to be seen. The camera settles in the aft of the ship. After panning around the crew doing very crew-like things like hoisting jibs and like coiling ropes and swabbing poop decks and things like that, there is only one person on this ship who is not working. This person is standing in the aft, which means the back of the ship, and holding a lute, idly strumming the lute and watching the setting sun. It is a young 16, 17, maybe 18-year-old half-elf bard named Remy. Billy, please tell me what your character looks like and what you're doing at this time as the crew is getting all their chores done at sunset.
Well, he's dressed in dark garb, mostly black. He's got like a half cloak down to his waist. Worn black doublet. He's got jet black hair that he's got tied back to avoid the annoyance of wind moving it in places where he doesn't want it moved. He's got black breeches, and he's sitting casually, like the most casually you can possibly sit on a ship with working men, like the kind of casual that you want to display towards a person of interest at a bar when you're trying to pick them up for the evening. Like, he doesn't have a worry in the world in his body, but you can tell in his face he's got a furrowed brow, he's got pursed lips, and he's thinking, and he's making lyrics to songs that he's playing, but you're not hearing any of them.
Excellent. I'm now going to give you a chance. This is cuttable if you want, but do you have any lyrics that you'd like to extemporaneously share?
Summer's a done. The sunset, na 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 na, ocean, it's not gonna work. It's not gonna work, you're a fool. Hold on, try again. 2, 3, 4. My mind is like the sun.
Oi, oi, sad boy, what are you doing?
You turn, and there is a shriveled old sailor who's kind of hobbling towards you. He's limping in a way that makes you look down to see if he has the stereotypical peg leg, but he doesn't. He just has a limp. And he's got gray hair with streaks of black, and he walks up to you and says,
"Oh, sad boy, what do you call that you doing right now?"
"It's entertaining."
"It's entertaining the hell out of me, but in the wrong way." "You look so sad back here by yourself. Why don't you talk to somebody?"
"Do I need to share what I'm doing, what I'm feeling with you? I don't even know you."
"Calm down, calm down. Listen, I just saw you looking so sad back here by yourself. I thought I'd come back here to ask if you'd like to help me speed the sloop."
"Speed the sloop? I don't know what that means. That sounds dirty."
"Pardon me, sir. Let's see if I can break it down for you. Would you like to assist me in determining the velocity of this seafaring vessel, me lord?" "What do you think, eh?"
I suppose I could. I don't see the harm in it, but I'd rather get back to writing this song as soon as I could.
Let me introduce myself. Maybe we started off on the wrong foot. My name is... well, don't worry about that, but they call me Old Salty. So, what's your name, my good master?
Remy flexes an eyebrow in contemplation, and he considers telling him his real name, but instead he extends his hand and goes, "My name is Brisbane of Candlekeep."
"Oh, well, Brisbane of, Candlekeep. Suppose it's nice to meet you. I didn't tell you my name either. I guess it's fair. Well, Old Salty, nice to meet the fake Brisbane of so-called Cooker Canyon Keep.
It's not fake, but well met, old salty.
Well met it is, and who cares either way, really? Nice to meet you, and nice to have someone who's, you know, paying to be here as a passenger who's willing to help out an old salt like myself. Holy gods, what is that?
And he looks off to the side of the ship. Just off the starboard bow, there is something coming very quickly towards the ship. And it's very small.
Hey, look, you see that? It looks like our other passengers are coming on board.
The crew kind of stops their work and looks off the starboard bow. As you turn your head to follow their gaze, you see what looks like a wicker basket floating exactly on top of the water. Inside the basket stands a man in his late 40s, maybe early 50s. As the basket gets very close to the ship, maybe 20 or 30 feet away, all of a sudden it begins to rise in the air, and you realize that the basket actually is attached to a giant bag or balloon of some kind, like a submarine is emerging, but it's a giant bag of liquid with a basket on top. The basket rises to the deck level of the ship, and then all of a sudden rises up in the air quickly, and there's a spring right underneath the basket that launches the man that's inside the basket up into the air towards the ship. He hits the ship and rolls and crashes after the roll into the port side railing. Quickly, the captain and the first mate turn and go over to help him up, and they begin to have a conversation in the front of the ship. Remy, old salty, turns back to you.
Oh, well, there's the new passenger. All right, you ready to help me out there, buddy?
I'm sorry, I was told that I was going to be the only passenger.
Well, it was like that when we picked you up, but, you know, the captain likes to make a little bit of extra coin, and I do know you pay quite a bit for this voyage for the private sailing, but believe you me, we're less than a day away from your destination, and we're just basically picking up what you would consider a roadside traveler who needs a lift into town. How about that, huh?
I can't have anybody know that I'm on this ship.
All right, well, this is very, very tough. You're going to have to talk to the captain about that.
Meanwhile, in the front of the ship, Magnus, you have arrived. You begin heading towards the back of the ship, and you see the scene that we've been describing with young Remy the Bard standing there, holding a lute, and talking to an old grizzled sailor.
Quite an entrance.
It's nothing.
Nothing? You had a giant balloon full of God knows what come out of the water with a little basket on the top? How did you conjure that?
Well, I personally didn't, but it is an excellent way to travel, except for the very end.
All right. Listen, we're almost there. Let's all just make nice here. We're all passengers together on this lovely seafaring vessel, and I've got a job to do. So you want to watch me in, what was your name? Brisbane? Is that right?
Brisbane of Candlekeep.
I don't care where you're from, just Brisbane. Brisbane and I are about to speed the sloop. Would you care to assist or watch in some way?
I think I will watch for now.
All right, sounds good.
At that point, the old salty sailor opens a box that's in the aft portion of the ship, and you see that there's a large, coiled, thick rope in the box. He hands Remy the end of the rope, which is tied to two pieces of board that are joined together in an X and lashed to the rope. He hands that to you. He says,
all right, this is how we do it. I don't mind telling you, this is one of the secrets of this ship, the Brazen Pegasus. You take these boards, which are attached to this line. This rope here that's attached to the boards has knots tied in precise intervals. So you're gonna, when I say go, throw the boards into the water and let the rope go through your hands. And every time a knot comes through, you count it. All right? I'm going to be watching this sand timer. When the sand timer runs out, you tell me what number you get to. And go.
And he flips over the sand timer and start counting.
1, 5, 7.
Stop right there. We're out of sand. What did you get, Tim?
8.
All right. 8 knots. 8 knots, Riddell.
And the first mate, the giant Cossack bearded guy, says,
Eastern bound, 8 knots. Gone out, 8 knots, Eastern bound.
8 knots, Eastern bound.
8 knots, Eastern bound.
As the pirates pass this information around the ship.
There you go, son. That's the way it works. We're traveling 8 knots.
Right, that makes sense. But one begs to ask, why would you share this with me without knowing who I am?
Because you're a sad little boy in the back of my ship, and I was bored and needed help.
At that moment, there is a hard yank on the rope that's in your hands. Will you please make a dexterity check?
I sure can. That is a 20 saver modifier.
You are doing a dexterity save. I'm sorry, dexterity save.
All right, 21.
All right, it does not pull you forward when it quickly starts to pass through your hand quickly. Faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. Do you grab the rope or do you let it go?
I'll let it go, but I count the knots. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's going very fast. Old Salty!
Wait, what are you talking about? It shouldn't be going anywhere.
But look at it!
Well, grab it!
No!
At that point, you have counted all the way to 20, and the rope ends, and it's tied off on the ship, and it goes tight. At this point, we're maybe within the last hour of sunlight. All of a sudden, you hear a noise. And as the three of you whip your heads around and look at the front of the ship, you see that there are humanoid beings that are crawling up the side of the ship. And there's probably 3 or 4 of them, yes, 4 now, that you can see. They look like half fish, half humanoid creatures, and they're making this awful sound. What do you do?
Old Salty, do you recognize those things?
Sea devils! Grab a weapon! We've got to fight them off!
I immediately pull out my rapier and brandish it in a fighting stance.
So, Magnus, you're the newcomer on this scene. Let me give you a moment of focus. You've just walked in, and all of a sudden, chaos has erupted as these fishmen are crawling up the front side of the ship. Describe what you look like, what you're doing, and how you're reacting to the situation.
So Magnus throws aside this cloak, and he's got a metal arm in place of his original left arm.
Right, and what does it look like? Does it look exactly like a human arm, or does it like robot mechanical?
It's fairly close to a human arm,
okay.
But it is obviously mechanical. Like, you can see the joints, and there is a bicep, sort of.
Great. Let's talk about different colors. Is it all silver metals or coppers or...
It's kind of like a gunmetal mixed with, you know, a few bits of copper and other alloys in there.
Okay, great. And what are you wearing?
He's wearing a white shirt,
uh-huh.
And brown pants,
uh-huh.
Boots, fairly basic clothing.
So how about sleeves? Do we have sleeves at all? Do you have like one sleeve gone to show off your gun here?
No, he's got sleeves, but they're both rolled up.
All right. And how are you reacting to this situation?
His first instinct is to stick his hand into the satchel that's at his side.
All right. Excellent. This is the point of the Dungeons & Dragons game where we say, roll for initiative.
Remy got a 16.
Magnus also got a 16.
All right. This is the Sahuagin roll. A 19. Higher than you guys. All right. So There are now four Sahuagin that have climbed up on the ship, and the sailors are reacting quickly. There's a crew of, looks like, somewhere between six and eight sailors. One of them's high up on the top of the mast and is sliding down a rope, and they're all moving in to confront these fishmen. So, 16 and 16, you guys are simultaneously moving. See how in sync our party already is? Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
All right, Remy.
All right, so Remy / Brisbane will deftly move from the aft of the ship to the Sea Devil's locale with a speed of 30.
With a speed of 30, you're able to walk to the midships. You're halfway to the front of the ship now, and you are able to engage in a Sahuagin that just now comes up over the bow, just to your left.
I look it dead in the eye and say, "God, you're disgusting," and lunge at it with my rapier. That is a 14.
14 is a hit. Roll damage.
5 damage.
Tell me about this rapier thrust. Or what are you so as trying to poke in?
As it's climbing over the ship, the railing on the ship, I take a lunge with my right foot and plunge it into the meatiest part.
It sticks right into him, and you draw it back out, and he makes an even louder nasty sound. But leaps forward and attacks you with, it looks like a piece of driftwood with some sort of blade that's been lashed onto the front of it with seaweed. What's your armor class?
14.
He rolls a 4, so he's unable to counter your attack because he's too busily scrambling up over the side. Magnus, at the same time this is happening, roll a perception check.
7.
The rope that is still dangling in the water from the aft now has two Sahuagins climbing up the rope behind you to attack.
So they are right behind me?
Directly behind you, and Old Salty.
All right. Magnus is going to pull his hand out of the satchel, and it's going to contain a stone that looks like a piece of quartz. And he's going to smack it into the deck as hard as he can.
Excellent. What ability is this that you're utilizing right now?
This is a Thunderstone.
A Thunderstone. All right. Please describe the effect that you are attempting to create.
There is a tremendous bang, and everything within 10 feet goes flying away from the Thunderstone.
Away from the Thunderstone. So, Constitution checks, please. To start, I'll roll for the Fishmen. 11. And 17. One of the Sahuagin is flung back into the sea as the boat continues to speed, traveling at 8 knots away from the Sahuagin. One of them manages to grab onto the rope, and he's knocked down a couple feet, but will still be able to crawl back up. Let's have your constitution check.
13.
13, so you just hit it.
Yeah.
Okay. Great, so Old Salty now has to hit a 13, and he's got no bonus. Old Salty is flung backwards and lands right next to Remy.
Sorry!
Next round, the Sahuagin go first. They're fighting with the sailors at the front of the ship. All right, 3 of the sailors that are wrestling with the Sahuagin get hit. One of them deflects. There's a mighty battle going on. 4 more fishmen come up. They're all coming up the port side, leaving the starboard side completely empty. Remy, you're standing at midship, and Magnus, you're still in the aft.
I'm going to take a step back and try again with the Thunderstone. I'm going to try and hit the fish man in the face.
14. Will you please roll a reaction as well? You're about 5 feet away from the explosion this time.
I take a much larger step back than I meant to.
All right. So let's say that since he resisted and you didn't, let's say that it kind of went off in your hand before you were able to throw it. And so the shockwave does not quite reach him, but it, boy, does it hit you and blows you directly back on top of Old Salty.
on top of Old Salty, all covered with Magnus. All right.
Remy, I glanced down at them, like, oh, you are useless.
All right. Old Salty says to you,
no, no, you all are passengers. You've got to make your escape. We're responsible for your lives, don't you know?
And he grabs onto your sword arm to try to stop you from fighting.
What else can we do in this situation?
Get starboard in the... There's a boat. Just get over there.
And he starts pushing you as his action towards the starboard side of the ship, away from where the fishmen are.
Magnus is going to very efficiently roll with it and just continue to roll in the direction that he wants to go.
That he wants you to go. All right. As you guys get to the starboard side, you can look over the side of the ship, and there's a small rowboat, obviously some sort of docking boat. If the larger ship, the Brazen Pegasus, was anchored off of shore, you could take this ship in to the shore.
Get out of here! We handle situations like this all the time. Captain Ortomay will deal with it. You guys just make yourself scarce and we'll come pick you up when this is all over.
So in backing up, I don't fight him, but using my words, I rub my fingers against the strings of my lute and the sea devil that I've been attacking. Remy Brisbane points at him with his hand and goes, "You ugly fish-faced mook!" And casts Vicious Mockery as like a one final thing before he gets into the boat.
Excellent. The Sahuagin, who has just now crested over the side of the ship and is leaning down to pick up his harpoon, stops and looks up at you. Its fishy eyes widen and its jaw drops down and it goes, as you see, your words are wounding it in a language it simply cannot comprehend.
Vicious Mockery does damage.
Yes.
One.
1 point of insult damage.
1 point of witty damage.
So that excellent Sahuagin noise that I just made was much more about grief and angst than it was about actual pain. But you really did hurt it on the inside.
And it has disadvantage on its next attack roll.
Excellent. And then you jump in the boat, yes?
Correct.
All right. Magnus, what does Magnus do?
Magnus is going to continue to clumsily roll up and over the side into the boat.
All right. You attempt to make a roll of some sort look like it rolls up over a 3-foot railing into a boat that is probably 3 or 4 feet down below the deck level, which looks absolutely ridiculous. Please make a dexterity check to make sure that you don't fall in the water. What did you just roll, Gabe?
No way. I rolled a critical.
This is the most graceful thing any bystander or fishman has ever seen, and a moment stops in all the melee when they look over at you as you fumble your way over the railing, landing in the rowboat. The rowboat, as you look around, does not have any oars, but it does have one switch in the front of it that's painted red.
Magnus immediately, without even thinking, just pulls the lever.
And something happens. There's a giant explosion of some kind that you've never seen before. And the rowboat immediately explodes out into the air with a jet of flame rocketing out of the back of the rowboat. And then instead of slowing down once it hits the water, it begins to speed up as you rocket southwards as the sun is setting. End of scene. Wallow. You are on an island. How long have you been on that island?
Oh, man, it's the worst island. I have been here for the breadth of at least one wet season, waiting for the weather to clear, collecting supplies.
You are a castaway on an island. You are a scholar by nature, so you have correctly identified that you're on an island called the Mother of Mists, just off the coast of Chult and off the coast of Lantan. And it is notoriously an island that no one goes to. So let's describe a little bit, without too much length, the experience that you've had surviving on the island. Were you the only survivor at first?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Quite a few of the crew made it to the island. Just every night, the tenebrous shadows seem to come alive and hunt the living, draining their life and ripping and twisting their souls from their body until they're more hungry, hungry, dead shadows.
And this has had been your experience for over a year now. The Mother of Mist is known by sailors as an area where, as the name would imply, mists arise on almost a daily basis and emanate from the island out across the seas, making this very dangerous terrain to get too close to the island. It seems that maybe the vessel that you were traveling in did just that. So, slowly but surely, your fellow survivors were picked off.
Devoured. In front of me, horribly, bloodlessly, but terrifyingly, as their mouths twisted into hideous mockeries of the people they once were and rictus, like, scowls.
So, here we are, over a year later. Every single night, undead beings come with this hungry mist that covers the island that you're on. In daytime, it's a normal jungle setting, an island about 30 square miles in either direction. So I'd like to know a little bit about how you survived, who has survived with you thus far, and what your daily routine is like.
Oh, of course I am not the only survivor.
Oh, really? I thought you were the only one.
No. I'm sorry. I am still accompanied by my friend and mentor, Master Orphidius.
Ah, yes. Master Orphidius.
So, as you said, every night we flee from the hungry dead, just from the darkest hours to about just before dawn, when the shadows retreat to wherever they slumber through the day. I collapse, sleep for a few hours, wake, scavenge for food, eat food, look for supplies from wherever my friends fell. Look for things that perhaps can get me off this island or keep me alive for another night from the hungry shadows.
All right. Well, early on in your surviving this nightly ordeal, you met Master Orphidius once more, who you thought was lost in the wreck.
Yes. Master Orphidius has managed to survive. I am, of course, his personal attaché, and I still service him. However, the strain of the event has taken its toll on Master Orphidius, and rather than deal with the difficulty of our situation, he seems to have adopted the mannerisms of a great ape, I believe, native to the region, an orangutan. I don't know where he got the orangutan costume, but it's quite convincing. He continues to communicate with me, but only in his roundabout imitations of simian speech.
So, soon after your reunion, so to speak, with what you believe to be Master Orphidius, you notice that Master Orphidius was very, very wise because he builds nests at the top of trees. And that seems to be the only safe space on the island at nighttime. When the sun rises, the island is, well, one might think it's a fantastic vacation spot. It's full of life and wildlife, plenty of things that you could forage for food. It would not be hard at all for someone with wilderness skills to survive during the day. But at night, Master Orphidius has shown you that if you can build a nest at the top of the trees, then you could fit one or two people in it, and you now both have two nests that are quite roomy for you that you've been living in for several months now.
And as always, I am eternally grateful for any of Master Orphidius' instructions, as strange as his inspiration is. But I have been listening to him closely, and I believe I have the gist of some of the necessary woodcraft to keep us afloat.
One day, as the sun is getting low in the sky, you are preparing for the nightly onslaught, which you're so used to at this point. You've, I'm sure, had several thoughts of rescue before. Why haven't you ever been rescued? Have you ever seen a ship on the horizon?
I have not. I believe most ships, as it is known, stay away from the Isle of Mists. We crashed here because we were attacked by these Tenebrous Spawn, which either originate from or have followed us to this island.
Have you ever attempted to build a craft in order to try to get off the island?
Oh, I have a makeshift raft. I just don't believe currently it could survive the rocks that surround the island or the weather, which can or has been notoriously tumultuous.
As you're thinking to yourself about this escape, you look off and you notice that the sun is very low in the sky and about to set on the horizon. As it begins to set, you hear a sound. It sounds like the waves when the sea is rough. The waves rush and crash one at a time in a rhythmic way on the beach of the island that you're on.
And this is close to sunset?
Close to sunset.
Okay,
right.
During the day, new things are fascinating and always worthy of investigation. So close to sunset, new things are terrible and always herald.
So how do you react? You're at the north edge of the island, which is coincidentally very close to where you keep your nests.
I guess I'm poking my head up, seeing if anything has changed, if anything is moving along the tree line.
So you're up in the nest?
Yes.
Excellent. Looking out. Well, from your elevated stance, will you please roll a perception check and let me know how well you are at spotting things out on the horizon on a misty sea at sunset?
Well, I actually might be the only ranger not trained in perception, but I do have a wisdom score.
18. That's good enough for me. With an 18, you can see that there is a rowboat getting closer and closer and closer. It hits the breaker zone of where the waves are crashing up on the beach and crests up off the back of the wave and catches some air. And then the rowboat smashes right into the embankment, right where the sand meets the jungle. And two figures roll out onto the sand. Will you, two figures who just hit the beach on a rocket sled at rocket speed, please roll constitution checks. This is a constitution saving throw.
It's an 8.
Magnus rolls an 8. Remy?
6.
Remy rolls a 6. Wallow. The front half of the rowboat crunches, and the back half of it erupts in flame and catches on fire. Two figures roll out to either side of the ship and flop onto the sand, and they're both clearly unconscious.
No, no, no. Oh, this is supposed to come during the day. Get rescued during the day. You can't land at night. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Wallow looks around at his nest. Do I actually think it could support two more people?
Coincidentally enough, yes. Because the nests that orangutans build are quite roomy for themselves. So if pressed, you could probably fit one orangutan or advisor in the guise of an orangutan, if you prefer, and one of these two people, and then you could share your nest with the other one.
I turn to Master Orphidius. Master, what should we do? Yes, of course we should rescue them. No, Master, you're too important. As long as you and I are alive, the expedition continues. But you're more critical to the mission than I am. Please, I insist you have to stay here. I will try and rescue our new island mates before the shadows come. And I kind of grab on to a nearby vine and like rappel down to the base, taking off towards the beach, grasping a large kind of cracked and worn crossbow.
Perhaps it's the urgency in your voice. Perhaps he can understand every word you say. But Master Orphidius decides to follow you. You arrive at the beach and there are two figures lying there before you. One
a middle-aged gentleman in good shape with an arm made of metal. The other, a young figure in his late teens with pointy ears, just starting to sprout whiskers on his chin and upper lip. Both of them knocked out, unconscious in the sand.
Yeah, not realizing, I guess, Master Orphidius is behind me, reach down, trying to grab each of them by the scruff of their collars.
All right, let's do this one at a time. Who do you reach down for first?
Let's go for the young man with Telcas. Oh, he's got a lute. Maybe that'd be really nice. Music. I remember music.
As you're examining Remy in his unconscious state, Master Orphidius approaches Magnus and looks over at you and starts poking at his arm as if trying to figure out why it's different than the rest of him.
Master Orphidius, yes, I understand. It's a very fascinating artifact. Maybe he's a priest of Gond or something. It's a very... I don't know that much about prostheses.
The orangutan says...
No. Perhaps Eldritch or mechanical or a hybrid of both, yes. Could you please help me drag that one back to the nest and maybe we can get them up in time?
He walks over to you and stands in front of you, looking at you oddly. Will you please make an animal handling check?
Oh, I don't have that.
11.
Congratulations, you hit a DC 10. Your orangutan is going to behave and do exactly what you want it to. So, you two are going to drag Remy towards the jungle?
Yeah, monkey see, monkey do, I guess.
Monkey see, monkey do, exactly. Remy, as you are dragged towards the jungle, you wake up and you realize that one arm is being dragged by an orange-haired ape, and the other arm is being dragged by... Wallow Wick Whisper, please describe yourself, Wallow.
Wallow is a manic man right now. Before like your vision clears, you could definitely feel basically anxiety vibrating off of whoever's holding your other hand. As it clears, you can see a man of mixed ethnicity, perhaps Semembian, perhaps Karatur, with your typical Chondathan. Difficult to place, but he is also wearing the remnants of winter clothes, like scraps of clothing held together with vine, twine, whatever else. He's got like a frayed cowl that might have once been a green robe.
A wild-looking olive-skinned man that looks like he hasn't had a bath in quite some time.
Why must these dreams be so outrageous?
Not dreaming. Going to die. Wake up. Are you awake? You should get up.
That's exactly what someone in my dreams would say.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. However, in this dream, you will really die unless you get up on your feet and get up that tree right there.
The sun is beginning to set, and as the day is shifting into night, you start to see a light fog coming in and rolling in off of the seas.
Let me tell you, when darkness falls, anything that's left on the ground is fair game for the hungry dead.
Seems like a game. I'm always up for a challenge. Now where am I going?
Up, up, up!
Anywhere up? A specific up? So literally anywhere.
The orangutan grabs the very vine that has just been indicated and begins to use it and the tree to quickly climb up to some sort of structure at the very top of a 50 or 60 foot high tree.
You have very poor self-preservation instincts. I'm gonna go get the older one.
All right. Wallow leaves you and heads back over to where Magnus is asleep on the sand. What kind of look do you have on your face as you're laying unconscious?
Absolute glee.
Perfect. Remy, what are you gonna do now that you are alone with a vine and a tree?
I say spitefully to myself, I have great self-preservation instincts. And then grab the vine and climb up the vine.
All right. Will you please roll a dexterity check?
10.
Perfect. You needed a 10. There are many handholds on the way up. Very easy to climb this thing. Moderately easy. You begin your ascent following the orangutan to the top. Wallow, You are now back at the beach next to a flaming rowboat with Magnus with a ridiculously happy grin on his face.
I'm fixated on that rowboat and, like, looking at the falling darkness. Oh my god, they'll be drawn to this. Like, moths to a, well, a flame. I'll take out my water skin, like, more or less, like, dump it all over the old man's face, like, shaking him while pulling him, like, please, wake up, wake up. All right. No time, no time.
Constitution save at advantage, Magnus.
17.
Yeah, 17. You're good. You didn't even need the advantage. Well done. You were doused in water and rudely awakened from whatever you were just dreaming about.
Hello, welcome to our island. It's about to be dark, and that means the hungry dead are gonna rise. Please, come, come, they're gonna be here any second. Your boat is on fire. They're gonna see it from wherever they live on the island. They're gonna come here, they're gonna be here any second. Now you have to come with me up. We have to get into the trees, we have to get in the trees right now, or we're going to die.
That was amazing.
Yes, one more time. You have to follow me right now or you're going to die. And he whips around and takes off to the trees, like, after saying that.
Magnus is going to follow, just chuckling to himself.
As the mists are rolling in, licking at your heels, you both make it to the top of the tree and perch in the two orangutan nests as a thick fog rolls in and covers the land and night falls, thus beginning an evening of terror you will not soon forget. And that's where we're going to end our session for tonight. So let's do a little sign off here. We're going to go around and remind everybody who we are. As I mentioned at the top, my name is Mark Slack. I am at Actual Slack on Twitter. Check me out. My name is Slack. I play Dungeons and Dragons. And let's go the opposite way around the table. We're going to go to Gabe.
All right, I'm Gabe. I play Magnus. Excellent.
Had a good time?
I did. Good night.
Good night. Doug!
Yeah, I'm Doug. I had a great time. I play a lot of Dungeons & Dragons. I play Wallow. I play Wallow the Ranger. No, I'm sorry. Wallow the Scribe.
We'll figure out which one as the campaign continues. All right, last but not least, we have Bill.
Hey, I'm Billy. I'm playing Remy, the level one half-elf bard. You can find me at Billy Unbound on Instagram or on Twitter at Bill of the Forest. That was so awesome, and I can't wait to do this again.
Hey, man, it's going to happen real soon as next week, in fact. All right, thanks a lot, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening. And just as a slight historical note, that is actually where the term knots came from. That's how ancient ships used to tell how fast they were going, by counting the number of knots that slide through your hand. So enjoy that and other historical snippets here on Dice Tribe. Thanks a lot, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Dice Tribe podcast. In our next episode, we meet the rest of our ragtag band of adventurers, the Clay Guardian Purpose, and the lovable goblin sorceress Drek'nish.
Drek'nish Baga Baga, that's me!
Meanwhile, you can catch more episodes, news, and stories on Twitter or Facebook at Dice Tribe, or at www.dicetribe.com. Until next time, friends, may all your roles have advantage, and may your adventures always bring you safely home.